Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, tonight is a show that really started resonating in my heart a couple years ago. You know, a fellow comrade of mine and Wayne Peters and I, we got to talking one day and we both realized that we were very patriotic, that we truly cared about certain aspects, and unbeknownst to us that we didn't know we shared the same aspects. With that being said, we did this courageous show tonight so the people of Canada can truly get an opportunity to have their voice heard worldwide. You know, I'm not doing this show for me. I'm doing it for the justice and equality for everybody. I believe everybody has a voice, and Prime Minister Trudeau is trying to seize that voice from the people of Canada. So I open my platform with open arms. Welcome to all the guests that have joined the show this evening.
Thank you so much. We're happy to be here.
You know, I'm going to start off with Wayne. You know, Wayne, you and I, we correlate, and Derek also, we correlate daily, you know, on the issues, the aspects, and the things unbeknownst to the world. You know, brother, what was it that truly brought you into the fight, that made you want to stand up and show that Canada meant so much to you? And what was it that gave you that drive and that ambition to bring others along and continue this fight?
Seeing the look of hopelessness turn to a glimmer of hope in the eyes of the everyday people of Canada that I thought and had been grown up being taught were my enemy when I went on that convoy out east last February. My world changed forever after that.
You know, I remember our first show we did together, and I look at the aspects, and Canada has gotten far darker since then. I look at the aspects of when Antifa, they attacked that elderly person, and even after he was knocked unconscious, they still slammed a brick into his head. You know, and aspects like that portrayed over and over in my heart and in my head. So I dug down the rabbit hole, because as a journalist, it kind of, you know, digs at you, and others that are on here that are journalists know exactly what I'm saying. You know, it's an aspect that just eats at you until you find the truth, you find what you're looking for. But when it comes to Canada, it's truly hard to find. You know, you can search far and high, you can search the black web, you can go down many rabbit holes. Ultimately, you will find the truth. Why is there an aspect now, and I'm sure we'll touch on many other topics tonight, but why is there an aspect now that is going to take away freedom of speech in the truest form from the Canadians? And I'll go ahead and ask Laura Lynn Tyler that.
Oh, man, we are facing a real nightmare. So I'm involved in a court case. I got in a lot of trouble because what I did was I went against a publication ban that said that a father of a young girl who was being transitioned against his parental rights. In other words, he had not given any consent that a 14-year-old was put on testosterone after a two-hour visit with an endocrinologist. What can he possibly have really learned in 2 hours about this young person? So this is what they're doing, is they're taking kids who all of a sudden, it's a 4,500% increase in gender referrals across the world, and everybody is just politically correct, shutting down, not talking about the insanity of the growth of transgenderism in our world. And so I listened to the father. He was very upset. He knew a lot of facts about this this social contagion that is going on, and he was upset. He went to court to fight for it first, quietly. He goes to court, and the judge orders that he will be subject to arrest without warrant without warrant if he speaks privately or publicly on this issue. Later on in a court case, that was changed that he could now speak privately on this issue. And so the courts basically have ordered, that it is court ordered, he must call his daughter, his son. He must use him, his, you know, the right pronouns according to them. And so now we have compelled speech going on in Canada under our noses. Then there's a publication ban put on so that nobody can really talk about the doctors that, you know, one of the doctors who is transitioning well over 1,000 kids in our BC area. So 500 of those actually are ministry children. By his own admission and words, Ministry of Children and Families, so foster kids, 500, this equals over 7% of the entire population of foster kids are being transitioned. So we are at a crisis here. So I go to court. I was in there for 2 days. The bottom line is, I won't bore you with details, but the Attorney General has now been brought in, and I am going to be considered to have criminal contempt charges put against me and the father for sharing this story. And now I'm facing the fire. So I feel that if I have to face any kind of fire, I am very honored that this is a hill that I have chosen to stand on, that we are not going to allow children to be sterilized and mutilated as teenagers, 14 years old and some younger, and say nothing about it in Canada. I will not be one of the silent. And so that's where my life's at right now.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that aspect. You know, when me and Wayne started doing these shows, and Derek, and I started coming on his shows, you know, we were way behind Canada, you know, as far as everything. But then, you know, as Wayne will tell you, as of lately, parents are now being told that it is going to be taught for children to fondle each other as early as 5 years old in the public schooling system. You know, I have a good friend who Wayne knows in Virginia, and he was sent a letter saying that if he didn't allow his children to be taught homosexuality or transgenderism, that his kids could no longer attend the public schooling system. And, you know, this is an issue that really touched home when What's Up Canada did the rapes of two Corys. It's an issue that's been perplexed for a long time. Why do you think Prime Minister Trudeau and other aspects of the Canadian government or parliament, you know, are pushing for this aspect to be allowed and, you know, I guess killing off the future in the aspects of a normal life as heterosexual beings?
Right. Well, think about this. This is shocking. So as we are in court on March 9th, the parliament is meeting, and under the guise of prohibiting conversion therapy, a bill of C-8, it's called Bill C-8, is going to make it a criminal offense for parents to help their own gender-confused children find peace in accepting their biological gender. They are looking at putting counselors, doctors, psychiatrists, and psychologists in jail for 8 years. This says for 5 years if they try to talk a gender-confused child into loving their own body. That's what we're looking at. Parents will have fines. Parents can be put in jail as well. We are facing serious days. How does one ideology that is unscientific, that is against all common sense and is very damaging, because there's 19% more suicidality after you've transitioned, and 82 to 92% of all kids who feel gender dysphoric, they'll desist from all of those feelings if you do not socially and or chemically begin them on this process. How are doctors doing this to kids? How is it going to be criminalized, you know, to not be able to speak sense to a child and say, and loving sense You're saying love who you are, love your body, accept the parts that God gave you. You know, there shouldn't be a big issue to this, but our governments are going to criminalize this. So while we're in court, the parliament meets and they are putting forward this Bill C-8 that our government is going to vote on. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pathetic because, you know, it's saddening. It's a sick subject. And on top of that aspect, for whoever wants to answer this question, but on top of that aspect, the parliament, or Trudeau, has added, I guess you can say, like they did here in the States with our gun laws, what they did, they manipulated the aspect of freedom of speech in Canada. They're saying you still have freedom of speech, but they're going to tell you what you can say and what you can't say, but you can still say it. That's not freedom of speech. You know, that's a dictatorship.
Yeah.
It's something that just really eats at me. You know, why is it that Trudeau has taken up in the last 8 years and truly tried to tear down Canada? What is he to gain from taking away the voice of the patriots like the people on the show today?
Can I step in on this one?
Yes.
So what we're seeing is the fulfillment of a commitment made by our establishment, not just Trudeau, not just the Liberals, the Conservatives, the Greens, the NDP, all four of those establishment parties have bought into the head of the snake. And I feel like I've said it 1,000 times since Christmas, and I'm going to keep saying it until we all understand that as terrible as that issue is that Laura Lynn is fighting, and I stand behind her 100%, as terrible as it is that we're losing free speech, as terrible as it is that we're having our guns taken from us, as terrible as it is that our education system is indoctrinating kids, all of these issues, we have an energy industry that's being completely decimated. We have other industries, logging, manufacturing, fishing, you name it, farming, ranching, all of them, they're all being affected negatively. Now, it's all part of the same globalist agenda. And so when we talk about, you know, this whole trans thing and freedom of speech, well, that's coming straight from the UN. If you Google the UN transgender, there's going to be a whole section in there in the UN website that discusses transgenderism. Then there's a whole other section for LGBTQ. There's a whole other section for all these different genders, and these are just small parts of the bigger socialist plan. Ultimately, it's global governance. Ultimately, it's this whole agenda to destroy Western civilization as we know it. And how best to do that? Go after our kids. Go after our kids in the schools. Go after their sexuality. Go after their identity. Go after all of these things and get them indoctrinated. Get them dependent on government. Get them, you know, in a confused state, get them a ward of the state, you know, all of these things. It's all part of the same agenda.
Yeah, it truly
totally
is.
Right.
You know, a lot of people that listen to my show are dismayed because my green room is lighting up right now, and I'm probably being called every name in the book. But, you know, as far as the states, when Obama became president, is when I, as an American, realized that the world had changed, that the life that I seen as a young man was never going to be that again. You know, I started seeing an aspect of humanity that I thought would never be forced upon the people, not just in the United States, but in Canada and all over the world. I saw an aspect of homosexuality being perplexed into the system. You know, as an American, as a man, or as a Canadian, as a man or a woman, we all bleed. We all think the same. We all want the same lifestyle. Why is it that we, the people, let corruptness tell us what we're going to have to do, what's going to transgend in our life, and how we're going to have to teach our children? You know, what you see is the fleecing of the world, not just two countries. But what I've noticed is Canada is dealing with the problems up front before anybody else. The suffering there is great. You know, I've walked down rabbit holes into the indigenous people. I've walked down this path with Wayne and Derek, and each day it's a new story. Each day it's something more heart-wrenching. Why do the people of Canada tolerate this? You know, I mean, I know there's patriots that fight, but why won't all of Canada stand up to defend what they love?
I think there's a sleeping giant. I think that people are very comfortable with lattes and their nice cars and our prosperous land, even though it's taken a hit since Trudeau came in. But people also seem to be very politically correct. They do not want to be called names. We have approval addiction. We need to be approved of. So therefore, if we speak against something, oh, we would just hate to have anyone mad at us or give us a funny look, or we don't want to be called transphobes. And we have the diminishment of courage, and courage is lacking in our land. It's hard to find. You find it most in guys like Mark Friesen and Frank Faughn and these ones, Lee Harding, David Haskell, people that will stand up for what's right. But in general, people are afraid to be called names, and we've become, I mean, it's disturbing to me that so many will not stand. But I do see a tide switch. I do see, like with what's happened with this court case, we had over 100 people show up, you know, on the days for the court and had to change courtrooms. People are upset. They're very angry about parental rights and things like that. And Mark's right, it goes back to the UN, but most people are not aware. So we've been caught doing fun things instead of important things. And now we're a bit behind. And now the activists, the trans activists like Morgan Oger, a man who has cut off his penis and now rails against society who thinks that, you know, that men shouldn't be in women's prisons or women's bathrooms or women's sports, that we are now bigots and transphobes. And a lot of us, a lot of people in Canada will just go, okay, whatever, 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 just do whatever you're going to do. Don't yell at me. Don't call me names. You know, for some reason, some of us are saying no to that. And then the slow uprising of the sleeping giant, it is beginning. I do see that.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with Laura Lynn. I think she's bang on. You know, one of the problems is in Canada, you know, we've had it really good for a long time. Even though all of these things were in development, and Canada actually played a very large role in developing this whole agenda. But we've had it really good. People are spoiled. People are sort of blind to it. And the other part is people have created a little bubble around themselves. And they only sort of worry, and granted, most people are busy. They have jobs, they have kids, they got, you know, kids' activities, whatever. They're only concerned about their bubble. And really, for many, many years, that was okay to be like that. But there's a number of us, and it's, the number's growing, who I've identified this as a problem a long time ago. We're seeing what we warn people about being brought into our country now in all these different ways. And so it's a matter of getting the information out. But secondly, we have to be there as a soft place for these people to land, because all of these issues are going to affect every single one of these people from coast to coast in Canada and throughout Western civilization. So when those consequences start to hit these people, we have to be there to show them that, you know, and be the in a leadership position, whatever you want to call it, whatever that position is, and be able to explain why this is happening, how we can fix it. And until we get to that point, unfortunately, I can pound the airwaves as much as I want in my echo chambers, which are also growing. But until people actually feel the pain directly, our society, the way it is, people aren't going to respond. They're not going to fight back because of a lot of what Laura Lynn says is people are, you know, first of all, they're comfortable, but they're also intimidated. They're scared to say anything. I mean, I get messages like you wouldn't believe in my email, in my messengers, from people saying, thanks for being the voice. I can't be that voice. Or I'll go out with my guys that, you know, I don't see very often. I'll go for a beer with them. And they'll all say, wow, you're doing such an awesome job. I wish we could join, but we just, you know, we'll get fired. And so there's a lot of
exactly.
fear there, but people are listening and they're hearing. and they are following. It's just, you know, they're not in a position right now of fight or flight. They're just at preservation right now.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, because truly the Canadian people really got the best of two evils. I mean, in the last election, you had the UN saying they were going to step in and take over Canada and run Canada unless the election went properly. But, you know, you ended up with Trudeau. Do you think that was the better of the two evils? Because, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the United Nations would have completely destroyed Canada at this point. So the question is, did you get the best of two evils? And what aspects is it going to take for the patriots like yourself and for other organizations like me across the world to be able to reach out in Canada to help create change and bring change to the people?
Well, I think we're doing it right now. And you know, I mean, so in terms of Trudeau, you know, there's a part of me that is actually, I guess, not thankful would be a terrible way to say it, but I kind of like the fact that he's in there pushing this. To be honest, it wouldn't matter if it was Trudeau and the Liberals or the Conservatives. Right. The Conservatives use different language. They come at it from a little different, you know, way instead of with a sledgehammer. But it's these consequences that are going to wake people up to what's happening. So unfortunately, you know, one of the first speeches I've ever given in any venue or avenue, I said that exact same. I have to thank Justin Trudeau for inspiring me to finally get off my ass and fight these things. And it took that for me to do it. And I'm hoping it's going to take that for people to stand up. Because if we don't stand up, if we're lulled to sleep and continue to be lulled to sleep like we are, we're going to lose. And they are so far ahead in this game than we are in responding. It's going to take a hell of a concerted effort to win it back. I mean, we've lost a ton of our sovereignty already to global governance. Now, whether anybody admits that or not, it's a fact. Everything that Trudeau is pushing through in as far as legislation and has already pushed through is all, every single one of them is related directly to the UN and its sustainable development agenda. Now, I know we're talking to a larger audience, so when I say sustainable development agenda, in the States, they've sort of rebranded it and it's the new Green Deal. But it's essentially living up to the commitments and the agreement of the Sustainable Development Agenda. So all of these issues, and this is what we have to get across, because we can micro-protest and get into these individual issues and fights and protests, but that's what they want. They want us to be separated. They want us to be divided by these issues. If we can unite the country around the idea of regaining our sovereignty and fighting back against this head of the snake, then we'll have the ability to actually fight and win. If we extend all of our energies specifically on particular issues that are coming up from every region in Canada, if we continue to do that, we're going to burn out, we're going to be overwhelmed, we're going to be engulfed by the greater agenda. It's so deep and it's so big and it's so encompassing that we really do have to wake up to the bigger picture and fight it as a united front.
I agree with you 100%. You know, Wayne, what is it that truly has invoked you and Derek and the other patriots to truly step up and do what you do on a daily for 365 days a year? You know, you've committed yourself wholeheartedly to Canada and to getting the news out and to finding every facet, every organization, because I know you believe in the people, because we've spoken on this many times. But what is it that has you correlating yourself, digging deeper? Because you made a statement the other day that was truly heart-touching to me, and that's one of the reasons why I took the risk in doing this show today, was it, you know, we could talk about it all we want, but unless we stand up and say screw it and fight for what's right, we're doing a social injustice. Yeah. What is it for you, Wayne, that made you finally say, I have to stand up and I have to fight for what's right in my country?
Fear. in one word, fear. And everywhere I look, all I see is fear. Fear of this, fear of that, fear of this, fear of bad names, fear of being attacked, fear of Antifa, fear of not having food, fear of virus. And I made a personal challenge to myself last spring when a second attempted convoy was basically deplatformed and shut down out of fear of retribution and blowback from Antifa. And these same groups that are now shutting down railroads and cities and this whole country, for that matter, it's the same group of organized people. And I decided, well, how could I have to do anything that I was not willing to do myself? So my hope was that if each day I could just inspire or motivate somebody by standing in the face of of fear and speaking out against the fear and trying to find better ways of tackling the topics of conversation that made people fearful, and to take the fight to the other people that are basically declared war on us as a society. Are completely right down to all of our base ideologies and religions, and life is now irrelevant to these people, and this is just wrong. And I had to step up and assume responsibility for my role in this in Canada. At 50 years old, I was a part of letting this happen, even if it was out of ignorance, not knowing that it was happening. Now it's my duty as a Canadian, if I want to or expect to see Canada survive, to stand up and take responsibility for my part in it. And if I can inspire and help anybody else to find a little bit of courage, just a little bit, one at a time, if we all find a little bit more courage, we can make change.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and brother, I commend you for it. You know, I love doing these types of shows. I like letting the world see what the press doesn't allow you to see. You know, I could speak firsthand, you know, as far as being an American, and, you know, there's truly just a border between us. There's no breakup of land. We're really one land mass. But yet, I never hear a word about Canada. Americans think Canada is this tremendous, beautiful place that, you know, nothing is wrong. But when you peel back that layer, you start to see a country that has truly crumbled and is now trying to rebuild itself. Is that a possibility, Mark, that the country will be able to rebuild and gain what it once was?
Yeah, you know, I believe it will. And, you know, the reason I do what I do is in part because I have family members, I have people that, you know, I've known and that my parents knew that fought and died for what's under attack right now, for our values, for everything that we cherish. And so, you know, personally, I don't want all of that sacrifice and the ultimate sacrifice to be done in vain. And as it is right now, we're giving it away. We're literally, you know, pissing on the graves of our warriors who gave everything by not fighting. We have to fight, and I think we will. I mean, Canada is known, you know, especially in the theater of war, as being voracious fighters. You know, if somebody heard through World War II that the Canadians were coming here or there, they were scared because they knew Canadians fought. We will fight. Once people wake up, we will fight, and we will take it back. We will get it back, but it's going to take some pain. It's going to take people to understand that what's under attack and why it's under attack. And I mean, you know, I grew up in the 80s where it was pretty clear to all of us that we knew who the enemy was, and the enemy was communism, and that there was no controversy in that. There was no debate. I mean, other than a couple of wing nuts here and there, I mean, we all generally understood that, you know, we have to win this fight against communism. And somewhere along the line, we've lost that. And the communists didn't go away when the wall came down. They just, this has been ongoing. This whole agenda has been ongoing. That was only the revolutionary side of communism. There's been a whole Fabian side of communism that started in the early 1900s where they said, and they broke away from the revolutionaries, and they said, we need to do this drip by drip by drip. Now, when you look at the UN now and who's been putting together this agenda, They all come out of Socialist International, which is a communist movement. They all come out. They all come from different communist sections within the world. And this is what the plan is. And all you have to do, I mean, if you read the 17 Goals of Sustainable Development, it reads like the Communist Manifesto. So all it takes is for people to understand that this attack by communism against everything we value in Western civilization, specifically Canada, they'll understand that that's exactly what this is. And they will understand, they'll get it, but it's going to take some pain. And unfortunately, we've been asleep for so long that we're going to have to, it's going to be a big fight. But we will ultimately win. We have to. Like, we won't have a choice.
You know,
this is why I think the battle of free speech so seriously right now in all of this, why there are many things that we all know is going on. We'll never be able to fight them if we don't get our ability to speak freely. And that is the most rapidly being attacked thing that is happening in Canada between the government and the lobbyists, NGOs, organizations, radicals. This is where we're at with the real war now is the free speech first. After that, it's a lot of people will admit that it's a lot of communism, but not before.
Yeah. You know, it's heartbreaking to hear, you know, the aspects, but it's also defining, you know, where Canada is at. You know,
absolutely.
Laura, you've done tremendous work in the industry, and you know what does the free speech and justice not only mean for the adults but for the children?
Well, apparently, you know, the adults in the children's lives do not have free speech. We've been duped into thinking we have it, but this case is basically showing that a child using what's called, up here we have the Infants Act. And the Infants Act gives doctors the right, it used to in the beginning say, after you have made every attempt to contact parents or in the event of the death of parents, you can use the Infants Act to do the best thing for the child, and you should be using practices that do no harm. Now we have the Infants Act being used to say to a 14-year-old, do you feel that you are able to choose and to decide to change your gender? You can't get a tattoo. You can't drink a glass of wine. You can't get married. You can't drive a car. But do you think that you should be able to change your gender and you feel like that right now? Then yes, you do. And parents are silenced. And now we have people, detransitioners. There's a brand new story out today about this young girl in the UK, and The Blaze is reporting on it. And she changed her mind, and she said, the doctors should have told me no. The doctors should have said, you don't know what you're, you know, really getting into. How can you understand the consequences of altering your body? She removed her breasts. She went on testosterone, changed the, you know, the chemical makeup, started growing hair on her face, and then went, wow, this is actually not what I thought it was. This is a bad idea. You know, I should have just been a punk rocker and, you know, not transitioned my whole body. And this is what's happening is, you know, we all had some rebellion as teenagers, right? But the schools and the establishment is turning children against their parents and parents against their children, in essence, because their parents are saying, no, this doesn't make sense, and standing up to it. Other parents are saying, I guess I'm wrong. Like, how can I go against an endocrinologist? I mean, surely the doctors know better than me. So free speech, I don't know what to say. I'm not allowed to say doctors' names who are sterilizing and mutilating patients in Vancouver, BC. I'm not allowed to say their names. Do you know what they said? They said that they've been getting death threats. I had to laugh. I mean, if I could show the death threats, the horrible, horrible things that have been said against myself, Jen Smith, the trans-identified man who's on our side, they have said horrible things, and mostly it's from the anti-bullying crowd, right, who writes us death threats. And so we're going to protect doctors. these doctors do commercials for their books. These doctors go on all the local news and radio shows. But we can't mention them in relation to a story where shouldn't they be proud of what they did? Oh, they got a death threat. I don't think that's okay at all. Like, call the police, let the police know you've had a death threat. But do not, you know, silence the community from knowing that some doctors are not using best practices. Some doctors are really, what I think amounts up to malpractice, because the doctors in the UK are now saying, we've had to leave Tavistock Gender Clinic because we don't like what we are seeing in the after this has all been happening with transitioning a number of youth. We see that this is a bad idea and we're leaving. And now doctors here in Canada are just doing what they're doing. No, free speech is in big trouble. And like Mark says, it goes back to the UN, all of these initiatives being pushed through worldwide, Australia, in the US, in Canada, in the UK, transition, transition, transition. And I hope we look back and we go, wow, that was a really weird period where we cut off kids' private parts and, you know, and did something weird and tried to tell them that they were gender fluid. I hope we look back and think that was bad and that we speak right now, even when it's costly to us. Whatever that costs, I say I'm not afraid. Whatever this costs, this is worth it because I'm on the right side of common sense. I'm on the right side of science. I'm on the right side of values. So I won't be quiet.
You know, I love it because, you know, and Wayne wanted me to bring this up, so it's a very great spot to bring this up. You know, I've been in the sports industry for 24 years. I've been doing journalism almost 17 years now. And I have friends who are world champions in all genres of the sport that live in Canada. They're willing to speak with me off record about what is going on up there, but they're not willing to stand up and come on my show and speak about it. And to me, that's an atrocity. When
wow.
A person won't even stand up and defend the children or their rights of free speech against a dictatorship and a regime. You know, I haven't asked Derek a question tonight, so I'm going to kind of jump to Derek for a second. You know, Derek, the passion is there, the love is there, the fight is there. What is it that is truly eating at Derek's story the most that has you continuing this fight, continuing this path that you're on, my friend?
Well, I can start with a little bit of a story how I got into it.
Go ahead.
Started off way back 2 years ago. Another pundit on YouTube, rightly, I'm sure everybody knows who he is, Kevin J. Johnston. And he was running for mayor of Mississauga. So he called up me and my friend Rick Boswick, and we ended up doing a campaign with him in Mississauga. And the Antifa attacks and stuff that Kevin got during the campaign, it was unreal, and the way he was treated against people. So that really opened up my eyes and started looking elsewhere where all this negativity is coming towards, like a man trying to stick up for a city that he loves, you know, because it's falling apart under the power of the mayor that's in there right now. So that's when I started really seeing that I needed to stand up. Things were falling apart. And with the kids that are in with Antifa, like university, their high school, stuff like that, they're young, and they're attacking people for no reason, you know? So that was part of what started that.
It's sad. It's saddening. It truly is. And brother, I commend you for what you're doing, you know, for the people, for your family. You know, Mark, you deal with Antifa, you deal with them telling you how you're going to raise your kids, you deal with the UN threatening to come over and run aspects of Canada, which they truly are, theoretically through Trudeau anyway. You deal with all aspects that are being perplexed that we talked about so far on tonight's show. How, as a man, as a pioneer, as a patriot, do you continue? Because you get to a certain point that you see all of this being stacked up against all of you. You've seen your lives being forced to be changed. What keeps that fire lit in your heart to truly defend what you know and love?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, there's no question it's taxing. It's no question, you know, I mean, it's every day. It's all day. I thought, you know, I got involved a couple of years ago when I started my YouTube channel and I started to talk about some of these issues. I mean, I've been talking about it on social media for probably 15, 20 years. I woke up after 9/11 and went through, you know, rabbit hole after rabbit hole and trying to walk through the maze of, you know, actual conspiracy theory and some real crazies and reality and trying to find my way. And I, you know, so it's been a long fight and it continues to be a fight, but it's in my DNA. I've always been a fighter. I've always fought for what I thought was right. I mean, all the way through school, I was that kid that, you know, we're told we can't wear shorts as guys in high school because, you know, it's offensive to somebody. But the girls can wear miniskirts. So, you know, I said, screw it. It's 35 degrees. I'm wearing shorts. If you don't like it, kick me out. And, of course, they did. So as an example, that was me. That's always been me. You know, all the way through my career in corrections, I was involved in the union or safety or both, you know, calling wildcat strikes, you know, fighting against management, fighting against, you know, what I see as wrongs. So it's just in my DNA. It's just the way it is. It's what I do. And if I see something that I think is wrong, I need to write it. I need to try to write it. And when I see people getting treated the way I don't think they should be treated, either on an individual basis or on a societal level, then I consider it my duty. And I am a patriot. I'm a born patriot. It's in my DNA. So I think I have a responsibility because I've spent the time, you know, researching and trying to understand what the hell is going on in our world, that I take it as a responsibility. So whether that's with the Yellow Vest movement or if it's in politics or if it's, you know, on my own channel or whatever, I'm going to use any platform that's offered me to try to educate and inform, because, you know, I'm a strong advocate of the saying that information is power, because it truly is. And once the people have that information, it's the people who represent the power. We've been lulled to sleep that our politicians are going to do the job that makes my life relatively comfortable. And we got to get out of this. We have to, because we're giving it away. We're just handing it over. And so the more I educate, and I see that, you know, I see that it's helping, that, you know, between myself and Laura Lynn and Wayne and Frank Vaughn and so many others. I mean, there's just a long list of people that are stepping up. You know, it's starting to happen. I'm starting to see it. Like when I first started talking on Twitter or Facebook and my YouTube channel about these things, nobody knew what the hell I was talking about. Now, when I go to Twitter, everyone that it's all day long. People are talking about the UN. They're talking about globalism. Now, that's not because of what I've done. I play a small part in it, but it's because it's in front of everyone's face. And they also, the seeds were planted that, hey, wait a minute. They were telling me about this 6 months ago, and now it's happening. That now the dots are connected, right? So, but yeah, I mean, for me, it's just something it's inbred in me. It's my nature, and I won't stop until they destroy me, and they're trying, or we win. And so, you know, and once, you know, I said this to Laura Lynn the other night. I said, you know, there are going to be some of us that fall because of whatever pressure is being put on us. It's important that there's people beside us that can take up that baton if and when, you know, I should fall or Laura Lynn falls or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we have to take up the fight. And so, you know, it's all about unity. It's all about coming together and fighting for the same thing. And we all understand our values. Like if you took a poll of every Canadian across the country, I can guarantee you the top seven values that people share would be the same. And it's those values that are under attack. So, you know, we just have no choice. We have no choice to fight. I don't have a choice. It's just who I am and it's what I do. If I sat and did nothing, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. So I'd rather take it on and take the pressure and the heat and do what we got to do.
You know, very well said. Laurelyn, would you say it's a political demoralizing of the people?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there's a rise in a political movement that we don't have the name for the party, but really it's political LGBTQ movement, which is the activist, you know, political members, not the regular everyday folks who are who just want to live their lives quietly and in whatever manner they want. I mean, this is Canada. We don't throw people off of roofs. We treat people with respect, no matter what their positions are. But there's a group of activists that say, you must bow to our ideology or you will be fired or you will be threatened. You will be socially terrorized. You will be brought before the courts. You will be brought before the attorney general. And so it's very terrifying. The amount of people who've written me today saying, oh my gosh, I'm so afraid. Like what's going to happen? And, you know, and all of that. And it's funny, I see fear, right? So that fear is making people silent. And we have this terrible government, Trudeau, who Lord only knows. I mean, I saw a picture of him at a pride parade. It was a video. And he looked high. Like he actually looked high. His eyes looked high. And he was like, oh, I'm so excited to be here. And he's hugging on a transsexual. And then he's running, you know, through the crowd doing high fives like a 15-year-old. And you're like, this guy's the head of our country, you know, and he's putting us billions of dollars in debt. And he wants to imprison psychologists for telling kids that they should be comfortable in their own body. Like, we are in danger, 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 danger. It's terrible.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, Wayne, brother, first and foremost, I love you. You know, this this has been an eye-opener for me, but there are issues that, like I said, that don't get the journalists like us in the lower 48. There's issues that haven't, you know, truly been discussed on the show. What aspects would you like to share with the world? Would you like the world to know? Because really, the rest of the world is sitting and looking at Canada, like I said earlier, as it's this tremendous place, but you know, the world is now knowing with its falsities, as you learned the first show with my board of political aspects and analysts that I had on. You know, they didn't believe a word I was saying about what was going on in Canada. And then I bring Wayne and others on. And by the end of the show, they were like, I didn't know. You know, so okay. What other aspects, Wayne, would you like to share with the world this evening?
I would like to see more of exactly that happen, you know, brother, that they, when they didn't know, and now they all know a lot now, and there's still so little that's getting out to you guys. And I refer back to Laura Secord so often, her legend that, you know, she warned everybody when the British were coming and she saved an invasion. And this is how I feel us up here talking north of the border approaching our brothers and sisters in the United States. We want you guys to hear this coming. This isn't the British this time. This is a conglomeration. This is an army of armies, an army of opposite ideologies that are exerting force to subvert us and infiltrate us, and they are at your border. And all of these things that keep tearing us apart socially in Canada is all part of a transition. And this is what the Americans need to understand the most, is this is part of a transition from a sovereign nation to a post-nation state of the United Nations. It will no longer be Canada next door to you. And there's a giant unguarded border between you guys. Our population is literally being replaced in serious percentages. And you guys need to be aware of what's happening, because we have no influence in our nation any longer. We have no experience on how to deal with a dictatorship of any kind in Canada. Canada has never had to fight for its own freedom. We've fought valiantly in other wars, but we have no idea how to organize ourselves to save our own nation. And we need the awareness of the mass of power and influence that the citizens of America have to come to bear on this global problem. Because if we can't stop it in Canada, how are you guys going to stop it across that big border?
You know, you're absolutely right. And I got to say, when we first started speaking on this path, it wasn't that bad here in the States. But how quickly we're catching up with you. You know, I got to say that, did I ever think the LGBTQ community would take such a hold on the United States? And these things that you had told me about, that at first I was like in awe, but then within months, the issues were correlating here. And, you know, I look at the aspects of life like it used to be. And I'm like you guys, you know, I want greatness for the future. I think the greatest knowledge lies in the elderly. And that's the thing that hurts me the most, is because Canada has deemed the elderly expendable. What can we do to create an aspect to help the elderly of Canada from being disposable?
That is such a heart-wrenching question. We're seeing cases, things happening here, like just this past week, I believe it was, where one elderly respite center, a small place with only 10 beds, was told that their funding was going to be cut if they didn't offer maid services, which is basically promoted euthanasia. What they're doing right now is they're using psychology, and they're having giant planning parties. They're bringing in party planners to talk to the seniors about how to turn getting killed into a birthday party kind of event to encourage this euthanasia. And if the facilities do not wish to participate, they are being told they must. And if they say, well, okay, we refuse your funding, we'll just find our own funding, they are then told that, no, if you do that, your entire assets will be seized and you will be shut down. This is how they're treating the elderly in Canada from a federal level right now.
Yeah, that's truly pathetic, because as a younger man in my walk in life, I've always clung to the elderly, because that's where I gained my knowledge. And, you know, it's heart-wrenching, like you said, because the wisdom of the true Canada lies with the elderly. They know, and they can share. But with a government like you have, it's not happening. They're trying to cease that aspect from being perplexed into life. You know, Mark, you have a tremendous voice. You have a tremendous heart and outreach for Canada. You know, the aspects of tonight's show was to share with the world. But I'm going to ask you, like I did Wayne, what sits in the bottom of your stomach that creates the most torment for you as a man? What aspect would you like to share with the world that truly every day eats at your soul?
That's a tough question. I'm actually going to say something that might catch you off guard, but nothing eats at my soul. And I say that because I don't allow it to. If I allowed these things to eat at my soul and destroy me from within, I'd be good to nobody. And, you know, I developed that, I guess, probably in 25 years of working in prison, where I tend to compartmentalize all of these things, all of the negatives, all of the traumatic events, all of the, you know, and try to, you know, deal with it my own way. So I don't try to, you know, I don't really, maybe I don't look at it. Maybe I avoid it. But at the end of the day, there's my job, you know, and my responsibility that I take on myself is what moves me. I mean, I'm discouraged, of course, and I get down and I get, you know, overwhelmed, because there are so many things that are coming that I know are coming and I've known for a long time. And so maybe that makes it a little bit easier to deal with because I knew it was coming. So, you know, from a, I just have to say that if I allowed this stuff to eat me away, I'd been done a long time ago because it's overwhelming. So I have to steel up and just say, you know what, it is what it is. We are where we're at. Things are going to happen. Things, there's going to be pain and people will eventually respond. And so, you know, I guess it's my hope that overcomes the despair because I mean, without hope, without the sense that we can get ourselves out of this, you know, I would be in complete despair because I guess because I look outside just, you know, if it was just me, I could go build a cabin in the woods and forget about it and it'd be all good. And sometimes I feel like doing that, but I have a wife and I have three kids and soon they're going to give me some grandkids. And so I want the same kind of life that I had. And even better, because it could be even better, you know, with freedom, with liberty, with justice, with a sovereign nation and with pride in our nation and pride in our culture and pride in our history. You know, those things are extremely important to me just on a personal level. But I also look past just my family. Like I, you know, in order for that to happen for my family, you know, I want this for everybody. I want our country to be that country that everyone looks to and say, hey, we should have done it like they did it. Look at that. They are the, you know, the shining city on the hill, right? And we have that opportunity. I mean, you know, Canada can be the leader in so many areas in the world, you know, just from a cultural standpoint, from a prosperity standpoint, from an environmental standpoint. You know, we have so much of what the world wants and needs, and we can be phenomenal stewards of that if we're allowed to do it. But I'm telling you, globalism is going to kill any opportunity Canada has, and we're watching it in real time. Canada being destroyed, being killed from the inside and the outside because it's our politicians on the inside that are allowing it to happen. Man, Canada could be just the like I said, the shining city on the hill, right? It could be a beacon for the rest of the globe. Not that we want to be the same as the rest of the globe, not that we want to, you know, but we can lead and we can show other countries how they can prosper, how they can develop their society to be free and liberated and prosperous. You know, what an opportunity we could have, but it's being completely crapped on by globalism, and that is globalism. I mean, we have a prime minister in Canada that told a nation 1 week after the first time he was elected that Canada will be a post-nation state. If that doesn't scare the shit out of everyone's boots, I don't know. I don't know what would. But people don't understand what that means when he says it. But people are starting to understand what he means when he said it, because we are becoming a post-nation state. Like, people just stop and think for a second what that means. That means no borders. That means no sovereignty. That means no culture. That means nothing that you recognize as Canadian is going to exist anymore, because we'll just be global citizens like the rest, like Australia, like Britain, like, you know, all these, especially Western civilized countries. If we don't stand up to this, but in order to stand up, we have to educate. We have to inform people as to what's really going on.
Amen. You know,
yeah.
This show is so enlightening thus far. You know, I do want to kind of change topics for a second and ask Derek his thoughts and sentiments, because I've already talked with Wayne on a show about this, but I want to get Derek's thoughts. You know, because I fell down a rabbit hole, and as you would say, Mark, you know, if we search, we find. And, you know, I fell down a rabbit hole with the Indigenous people of Canada, and I called Wayne a little upset. And I got a little schooling from Wayne. You know, so, Derek, if you would, explain to my listeners, because I'm sure there's other aspects and conspiracy theorists and true journalists that have fallen down the same rabbit hole that I have, that in some aspects I felt sorry for the Indigenous people. But then there's a certain criteria behind that. Would you please explain that for the world?
Well, as you all, I don't know if any of you guys, any of your listeners heard about the rail blockade stuff going on in Canada. It's over natural gas pipeline and all across BC where the pipeline goes through. I think it was 12 of the band members approved it. The community didn't. So what happened after that, took place probably about 12 years ago. What happened after that, these socialists like Antifa, Extinction Rebellion and stuff like that, started building this movement with the Indigenous people to shut down Canada. So as more and more came, they were pushing that the RCMP are assaulting them, committing genocide, going into their camps, removing them from their homes and stuff, same with Coastal Gaston. So it built up some momentum. They started blocking railroads, blocking roadways, bridges, stuff like that, and it started off as a noble thing. They're protecting their land, but Antifa, we'll call them socialists, they came in, co-opted, and made it about a communist revolution, more say. Like, let's shut down Canada, let's make it uncomfortable, and stuff like that, and it's just gotten blown out of proportion, and a lot of chiefs and members of the community are starting to notice that there's been hijacked. In Tandanega, Ontario, they noticed that QP, which is a union, which is another part of that people, are overstaying their welcome and just getting in the way of stuff. It's just kind of sad how the youth, the young children, and unions have all combined together have done this to Canada, shut it down and make it convenient for everybody else because we're colonizers, we're settlers. We're the mean white people, you know?
See, it's sad because the rabbit holes that I fell down, I've seen them attack tribal elders. I've seen them, they're not normal police, but they're on the reservation or whatever it may be. But then I also seen regular police correlated with that, Canadian Mounted Police. You know, and I've seen an elderly woman attacked with a hasp at a protest, and it was a peaceful protest. You know, in either world, either country, wherever you're listening from, there is no right to beat on an elderly person. I mean, that kind of dismayed me. But not all Indigenous people took the money or drank from the well. And now, if I'm understanding correctly, please fix my thoughts if I'm wrong. But now all the Indigenous people of Canada are suffering for the few that drank from the well and took the money from certain aspects or criteria in the Canadian government. Am I wrong, or am I?
You're right. There's a lot of funding from outside sources like Tides and other places like that. You know, the big problem I see here is the cops, why they're not doing too much, because they're running off the two-tier law. We're running off Canadian law, and the other side's running off of United Nations, UNDRIP. So it's colliding and it's making a lot of confusion with the law enforcement stuff on how to act on protesters.
Yeah. I'll say.
You know what? We've got a caller. I mean, my board's lit up, but I'm going to take very, very few calls. I don't know who this is, but if it's disrespectful, I'll go ahead and hang up. Caller, you're on the Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. How can I help you?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. So my name is Risa Upton. I live in Ottawa. I've lived here all my life. Basically, I really believe that a huge part of our problem in Western civilization is that we have totally lost our values, our foundation. Our country was built on Judeo-Christian values. Our laws, they were created actually biblically. And so when the nation turns its back on morals and values and the things that make us great, we suffer greatly. And I think really our the United States and Canada and Europe and all of our Western countries, they have forgotten what it means to be righteous. They've forgotten what it means to be true to your heart. We have fallen into the trap of wanting to be about me, and we've been lured into, you know, money and power and all of those things which really don't give satisfaction. So for me, I think that our nations need to get back to God. I really do. I'm being really honest about it. I think it's really important that we live with values, and we've lost all of our values. It's gone. For me, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah on steroids, honestly. I personally feel that we need to hold a national day of prayer for millions of people to stand and repent for the nations. That's what I think will move things. And of course, I believe that we have to do things and step into areas and take stand like Laura Lynn does and like Mark does. But there are many aspects, but I think it's really important that we really pray, we really fast, and we really repent for where we have gone so far away. But we need to get back to, even if you don't believe in God, you have to get back to what really is right and what is wrong. And people's hearts need to be changed. Our culture needs to go back to what we were built on and what made us great. And I think that's what's really, really important. I really do. My heart breaks to see my country falling apart day by day and people totally lost, thinking that this is going to make them happy. And what are they giving up? They're giving up everything. So
that is so good. That is so good. Thank you for sharing that. You know, when we say Judeo-Christian values now, you'll get a lot of pushback on that, right? But think about how our founding fathers, our nation was formed on, I mean, the Ten Commandments. We used to have prayer in school. We took that out, right?
Yes.
Now we've got LGBTQ stuff in school, and either you believe that or you might be facing prison. Either you allow your kids to be taught that or you might be facing prison. The reason people from all over the world want to come to Canada is because our nation was founded on the best possible principles, biblical principles of love, of acceptance, of freedom, of choosing. You know, not even Jesus ever said that, you know, that you have to serve him. He never begged one person to follow him. He said, choose me or don't, but I hope you choose me. So now we have a nation that's turning its back on these principles of freedom, and we're ending up with chaos.
Yeah. Well, it's about, you know, choosing life or death. That's really what it's about. Are you going to choose life? Because really, if you want to do that, then you have to do the right thing. And we have a soul, we have a conscience. People know right from wrong intrinsically, but it's been so seared because of just, you know, it's creeping and creeping, and bit by bit, it's like this darkness has covered our land.
Just ask people. Yeah, just ask people who've come from Poland or China, or you know, places, you know, Korea, where, you know, there is not a celebration of the kind of freedoms that we love. Where did we get that idea? That idea came from a religious history and a biblical foundation. And we want to deny that. And it's not like, okay, well, go ahead, but that's where we got it. Do you want to be like Iraq? Do you want to be like Syria? No, we love Canada because it was formed on some principles. And they want to erase history. They want to change it. But the beauty of the Judeo-Christian values is that if you don't believe in those Judeo-Christian values, that principle and that foundation will still defend your right to not choose it. and to live as you like, but while maintaining that we have free society, a lawful society, and that we have commandments that we choose to live by. And so it's funny when people don't want to accept that. Well, it's like, well, what do you think is a good idea? A socialist? Sorry, I've had a little bit of a cough. A socialist government, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want that. They want to come to this beautiful place, but not, you know, not honor the very foundation it was formed on.
Yes. Well, I think, you know what, I think it really scares me. My father was born in Austria, Vienna, and he fled the Nazis, and he wound up in Shanghai for 10 years under Japanese occupation, and he literally fled to the United States and then came to Canada. And, you know, for me, it's the same sense of this spirit of, like, it's this Nazi kind of feeling, and it really scares me. It really does, because I see it just the way that the government is running. It's a totalitarian thing that is taking over control of everything, taking away. And it's like, even our children, it's like, you know, the Nazi youth. I mean, it's scary. It really scares me. I don't want to see our country turn into some controlled where we lose everything, absolutely everything. And my father suffered terribly, and he came here to be free, and he started his own business. And, you know, I mean, years later, I had an encounter with Jesus. I'm a born-again Christian, but I'm a Jew, and I have all of this rich history. And it's like, wow, you know, like, I was so blessed to actually be born here, you know. And I have children. I'm going to have a grandchild any day now. And I just want them to have the benefits that I had, you know. I really do.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, from my perspective, you know, we have to recognize that our civilization, the civilization that's the best civilization the planet humanity has ever known, and that's Western civilization, and that's based on Christian values. I mean, it was created on after Reformation, and the idea of the individual being important, and the individual having a voice, and freedom and liberty and justice, all of these things are based on Christian values. So even though I'm not a religious person, you know, I'm spiritual. I believe, you know, in what I believe. I believe there's something more going on. I'm not I don't go to church. I'm not a church-going individual.
Yeah.
But I recognize the values that were instilled and in people and created Canada and created Western civilization. And we have to go back to that. We have to understand and recognize that that's an important element to what we created. And
exactly.
If we don't, then we'll lose it.
You know, it's interesting.
Yes,
all over Parliament Hill, you know, there's scriptures everywhere. And on the Peace Tower, it says, "He shall have dominion from sea to sea, from the river to the ends of the earth." And, like, it's written in stone. It's very interesting. I mean, it just shows you what we were founded on.
When this is what we're having to, whether we want to or like to or want to acknowledge it or not, is we are being smacked in the face with a different system that has a completely different base of values, where our system that we're fighting for, that we believe is Canada, that values life and liberty and the ability to do your thing, to stay in your lane, to just do no harm to others. You have the right to freedom to build a life, and that is completely pulled the opposite to the system that we're encountering, that we're in, literally of a transition to. So this is, you know, it's the values that drive the system. That we could spend all day talking about the values behind the systems, but the what's in our face right now is the system itself, and we are so fractured debating these different things that we want our individualism and our individual value to be important, and we're being overwhelmed with the dust storm of the system, and I really doesn't care what we are interested in arguing about.
Yes. Well, you know, what I I really feel like I do have hope for our country. I wouldn't be fighting the way I fight, and really, you know, I have a passion for Canada. I have a passion for the people. I really do. But I feel that there's like this massive shaking going on with the coronavirus and our economy tanking and all kinds of things going on. And I really think that, you know, when people hit bottom, when things just go crazy, that's when people start to say, wait a minute, like we are at a crucible where we're about to lose everything. And then I really believe that people will arise and will stand and will say enough is enough, but we haven't heard enough. Like Mark says, you know, we haven't heard enough. Like, and until we get to that point, you know, we just have to keep on pushing it and reaching out and speaking to as many people as we can and give them little bits. You can't overwhelm people with stuff. But I think I have hope. I really have hope that we will come through this. And it could be bloody. It could be really hard. You know, we all might face a lot of persecution. But, you know, I'm willing to stand. I really am.
That's it's part of the human condition that people don't tend to not learn their lesson until the price they pay is high enough. And that's, Canadians just haven't hit that point yet, but I think we're getting there quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, caller, I appreciate you calling in. You know, it's tremendous that you're able to share and voice your thoughts and your love for Canada with the world. You know, truly thank you, and it's been an honor for me to have you call into the show this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this. This is wonderful, and it's an honor for me to be able to just share this in my heart. It really is. So thank you again to everybody, and you guys have a great evening. I'll continue to listen.
Thanks, Risa.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye. You know, that's heart-wrenching. You know, to hear the love that she has for Canada, but to hear the fear for the future. You know, it's one of the reasons why I did this show this evening. You know, Mark, I think it's tremendous that you articulated your thoughts, being a man that isn't, you know, and nobody take this wrong. It's just a correlated thought. But a Bible thumper or somebody who goes to church on every Sunday, you know, because it shows the world that values and intent are truly what tonight's show is about and what Canada was based on and formulated on and the foundation of your country. You know, how does it make you feel, you know, after hearing that call? How much more does it make you feel knowing that what you're doing is right after hearing that call, sir?
Well, and you know, at the end of the day, anybody that has an understanding, and I've talked to Risa before, so I know she understands the depth of our problems at this point. You know, anybody that gets to that point does have fear because they recognize what's happening and they recognize, you know, how tenuous our little situation is here. You know, we're in for a rough ride, but even in her fear, you know, she still has hope, and you know, that's like every one of us that's on this show and probably listening and watching. So you know, but it inspires me. It doesn't deter me. It doesn't bring me down. It actually fires me up. It inspires me because, you know, that's what I'm doing it for. That's why I sacrifice what I sacrifice and put my head up to be chopped off. That's what it is. That's why I do it, you know, and I'm doing it for people that don't even know it needs to be done. Right. Because, you know, there's so many people that just don't understand, don't have the time. You know, we're doing it for them too. Right. We're doing it for everybody that doesn't have an understanding. And, you know, it's just more inspiration as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, I kind of want to jump back on a topic that Laura Lynn brought up earlier. You know, because I want people to understand, and Wayne already knows this because we've discussed this, the cerebral cortex in a female doesn't, you know, fully develop until the ages of 18 to 21, and then and a male, it's 21 to 25. So where do the doctors get their thought, their ideology, that somebody under the age of 18 can truly find that or define that aspect of what sexuality they want to become? Why is the parent being, are they being forced, are they being coerced, or is it just something because the doctor said so, so I think my child needs to walk this route? You know, why is it this, why is this happening when the brain isn't even fully developed, you know, in male or female until they're, you know, particularly over 21?
Absolutely. You know, I mentioned this in court, that teenagers' brains are just, they're not prepared, you know, and I submitted documents to that effect, actually. You know, young girls were very emotional when we're teenagers. We're, you know, we're up one day and down the next, we're crying, we're this, we're that, we're having an identity crisis at you know, any given moment, and somebody says something about us, we're hurt, we're angry, we don't know which way's up. And so you want to take someone at 14 in a very vulnerable season of their life, do you really want to give them a loaded gun of testosterone shots to alter the course of their entire life at this very pivotal, vulnerable time? This is why the Tavistock doctors are quitting. This is why, you know, young women, as they get into their 20s and their brain has maybe had some adjustment, and they're going, you should have stopped me. Like, what were you thinking allowing me to do this? And so this is horrendous. And everyone just sits there sort of like a deer in headlights. Even those who don't agree with this gender theory, the parents I'm finding, they don't want to say anything because, well, maybe another mother will be angry, or maybe there is a gender, you know, dysphoric child in the classroom, and so they want to be sensitive, don't want to appear like we're being bullied. At the cost of being needing affirmation for your own personal, you know, self, we say nothing, and we allow this atrocity to happen. And parents need to be encouraged. The number one thing people are writing to me, they're saying, thank you for your courage. I'm feeling more courageous now. I see you speaking, and I'm like, it's so easy. She just says it. Like, she just says, we don't believe in gender fluid theory. She just says that. So now I'm going to just say that, and I'm going to say that to my friends and at school, and I'm going to tell the teacher, please don't teach my child anything about gender fluid theory. We do not believe it. That's a simple sentence that you should be able to speak to any teacher. And if you get pushback on that, you know what? It might be time for us to leave public school en masse. Like, just get your kids out. Give the government 2 years to go, okay, wow, we don't get the same funding anymore because all these kids left. Like, do something. Protect your child. Don't let them be indoctrinated with this, because at a really bad moment, your kid could get an idea that, wow, this is maybe the answer for my life. And they're vulnerable, and they need to be protected.
Yeah, very well said. And, you know, I appreciate you articulating that. You know, I will let you guys know we're probably going to have to wrap things here in a second. I just put in a group text. They're trying to hack my show right now is what they're trying to do.
Wow.
So with that being said, yeah, because I don't want any of the things shared tonight to be, you know, for my show to be hacked and, them, you know, them go in and destroy the audio aspect of it.
Oh, my.
We're going to kind of keep things brief. Well, you know, that's the sad thing.
Thanks
about,
for having us.
Well, people don't want the story to be told, and it's obvious because I've had multiple hack attempts so far. My studio lets me know, but when the number shows up, 1111111, first of all, I've had that happen on a show before, and as soon as you answer it, they take over your studio, and I'm not going to give them
wow.
another 35 minutes of airtime. I do want to touch on one more thing, you know, before we kind of wrap things up here. You know, all of us have a passion and a love for Canada, and not just Canada, but for life in general. You know, Mark, you're a very articulated, well-spoken man. If you had to make a final thought for the world to hear about what we can do for Canada and what the aspects you would like to see circumvent in the future, the floor is yours, sir.
Oh, that's a heavy question. You know, at the end of the day, people have to look at their values. They really have to understand what their values are. I'm not sure a lot of people do that these days. I think they just, you know, sort of go through life and they get caught up in the everyday elements of life that take us away from sitting down, taking a breath, and understanding what you value. And like I said, once, you know, we share a lot of values across our country, throughout Western civilization, and ultimately around the world. You know, again, we want, you know, most people, I think, want liberty and freedom and justice and sovereignty and equality under the law and respect and tolerance and all these things that make Western civilization great. We all want that. And you know, we want what's best for our kids. We want what's best for our family. We want to prosper. You know, and I think if you asked anybody, they would say, yeah, of course. A lot of people, of course, differ on how we're going to achieve those goals. But we need to recognize that all of those values that we share are under attack. I don't know anybody that wants communism. I don't know anybody that wants full-on socialism, as it, you know, if people understood what that meant, ultimately leads to communism. I don't know people that want that, and I don't think they do en masse. I don't think the majority wants that. So we really have to look at our values, and we have to understand that those values are under attack by a concerted effort that's been in the works and creation and development for a very long time, and we're starting to see it come, and we need to wake up to it. And if we wake up to it, we will naturally unite to fight against it. It's one of those things, I think, that's innate in all of us, that if something we cherish is under attack, it's fight or flight. But I think ultimately people will fight, because there is no flight. It doesn't exist in the realm of a nation. That you can't just run away from where you're going to go. Like so I think naturally it's going to happen. I think people just need to recognize that it's happening, and their values are under attack. And I'd love to join you on another day, because I'd love to get into this UNDRIP discussion and how they're using UNDRIP to essentially steal our sovereignty. It's very important, and it's relative to what was happening here in Canada lately with our all the protests and the Wet'suwet'en and all that stuff. So I'd like to spend some time discussing that with you sometime as well.
Most definitely. To be quite honest with you, I'm going to start dedicating every Wednesday to the Patriots and the people of Canada. You know, I've got the green light from my attorneys and from my sponsors, and I'm going to fight this fight with you, my brother. You know, I'm going to turn the mic over to Wayne. Wayne, is there a statement of thought that you would like to correlate to the people that you love so much in Canada?
Oh, well, it's nothing like being on the spot.
Right.
I know the pain is great. There's going to be a lot more pain whether you choose to do anything or choose to do nothing. Either which way, there's going to be a lot more pain. The possibility that we could have Canada back should be, I would hope, that people find themselves a little bit of motivation that are of these organizations and thugs and bullies, and forget the bullies and find a little bit of courage to endure a little bit more pain. And sooner or later, history's proven that people always win. And it's up to us to decide when that's going to be. And I'm hoping to, every day I meet more and more people that are open, I have faith, and to just keep things moving. to get back to being what Canadian is, what you were taught, what you were brought up and raised at, the pride that you had, the things that had to be Canadian, that made you a person that everybody else in the rest of the world wanted to be. That's all we got to remember is who we are. We will find our way.
Derek, you know, same thoughts pretty much, but articulate them in your own words, my friend.
Oh, okay. Well, like I always say, love isn't just love. Love is a struggle. It's pain. It's hurt. It's happiness. We got to harness all that pain and fight for our country and fight for our neighbors in the United States. We're all the same people. We're all human. And we're going to push hard and fight this. I am. I'm not going to stop. I've humbled myself. I don't have much. The only thing I have is love for my kids. I love my country.
You know, tremendous. You know, here in the States, you know, as an American citizen, I'm actually an American Indian. So, you know, it's kind of a double travesty for me to see the correlation of our civil rights being rewritten. You know, it's so crucial for the world to understand the smoke screens. And, you know, not all, I will let this out before I let Laurelyn give her final thoughts of the show, but I will let this out. You know, I used to think the conspiracy theorists were freaking nutballs, that they didn't know what they were talking about. But, you know, I still think a lot of them are that way, but there's one that has taken to my heart, and I would like to share his name and his show with you, and that being Pat Miletich, a gentleman that runs a show called The Conspiracy Farm. You know, he has spoken to me in great depth off topic about the atrocities in Canada. His wife is Canadian, so he doesn't want to correlate or cause any indifference on his show. That's, I guess, the best way to say it. But check out his show, because The Conspiracy Farm truly talks about certain plights and certain aspects of what are really going on in this world. And he's the only one that I know that said something 3 years ago that is happening now today on several different aspects. You know, not all of them are nutballs, people. Trust me, they're not all nutballs. But check out The Conspiracy Farm with Pat Miletich. I think it's an enlightening show. It's a show that I've shared with Wayne. And, you know, tonight has meant a lot to me. For people to come on a show with me and entrust me with the thoughts, their prayers, their love for Canada, to share them with the world, it speaks profoundly about each and every one of you. People that are willing to stand up for what they believe is right is lost in humanity. But all of you that came on the show this evening are showing aspects that humanity is still here. Compassion is still here. And if you love something enough, that you must stand up and fight for it. With that being said, I'm going to pass the mic to Laurelyn. Floor is yours, my friend.
Right. I just want to thank everyone for standing. I ask that Americans who hear this would pray, and that you would stand early for your country, for any freedoms that you see being eroded. Stand behind your leadership who is fighting for your freedoms. And for Canadians, I just... we need courage to rise. We need to speak now, and we need to speak strongly in quiet voices, in coffee shops, with other parents, with other friends. We need to have conversations that are difficult. Start standing, speaking out. It's so much fun to fight. I can't tell you. This has been the hardest couple of years, for sure. I lost my national broadcast job through fighting this. However, it's been the most fun 2 years of my life. And being in court and speaking truth right to the faces of my enemies who dearly detest me and detest the freedom that I operate in, to be able to speak it without hesitancy, you know, with strength, with honor, it is fun. Don't think that it's fun to be not courageous and stay in the background. No, no, no. It's super awesome to stand even regardless of the price. So I call all people to do that, to do what Mark is doing and Frank and, you know, all of the Derek Rants in the world. We thank you for standing up for what is good.
I will stand up every Wednesday because, you know what, I detest people that complain about a problem, but every day after work they go home, they pull their car into the garage, they pull down their blinds, and they shut off the outside world. That is not helping a fight. That is not helping a cause.
Right.
You know, we all bleed red, you know, and if we were colorblind, we would see no difference. But you know what? I love Canada. I'm going to continue to help you guys get the word out and fight this fight. Before my show gets any more infiltrated, they're trying to, on several different aspects right now. Thank God for VPN
okay,
blockers.
Go.
yeah,
okay,
we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. I do want to let Wayne let people know where they can follow him and where they can continue to hear speakers like yourself on his show so they can get a greater understanding from my show what the plight in Canada is about. Wayne, if you can, real quickly, give your platform a shout-out, brother.
It's What's Up Canada. You'll find us there on almost all of the platforms. We do, you name it, it's a Canadian voice. That's what we're here to share, telling the stories, the truth that even the other journalists cannot get to. This is what we do. We're about bringing the voice of the people to the people, sharing knowledge and talent. And on that note, after this, if they come and find us, after this radio broadcast, we are opening up the video version of exactly what we've just done here. And everybody that's here is welcome to join us over there as well on YouTube and Facebook with Noble Savages and What's Up Canada.
Most definitely. You know, we're gonna correlate an aspect of me being on your show or you being on mine, but all of you, rest assured, I'm in this fight with you. I will be in this fight with you until the day that we get justice for all, not just in Canada, but justice in life. I appreciate each and every one of you coming on the show this evening. I truly appreciate letting the world know what your plight is. With that being said, all of you, thank you. Have a good night, and God bless.
God bless.
God bless.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. You know, I love that aspect of the show because they tried to hack my show on several multiple occasions. They didn't get through, thank God. The story of the Canadian people needed to be heard, and I will continue to walk each and every footstep with them. You know, there is no border that takes away pain. There's no border that changes the color of my blood. Canada, I will continue to share your voice. I will continue to fight your fight because, you know what, life isn't meant to be a struggle. Life is meant to be enjoyed. So with that being said, I'm Don McGuire. Thank you for listening to The Fighter's Voice.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said cheers with my baby sister over the years.